Sit solidly like a bell. Walk gently like a light breeze. By investigating Chan, we cultivate samadhi. Chan investigation is neither conditional nor unconditional. Specifically, Chan investigation appears to be unconditional. Actually, when we investigate Chan, we are helping to increase the proper energy in the Dharma realm. If everyone investigated Chan, there would be no wars in this world. It is said that sitting for a long time, we will gain Chan. But Chan investigation is not only done while sitting. We can investigate Chan while standing, walking, or reclining as well. A hard-working cultivator does not allow mundane matters to bother him. He holds the meditation topic at every moment. Remaining ever in the present, we investigate who is mindful of the Buddha. When, through our investigation, the mountains disappear and the waters vanish, then in that ultimate state, we will naturally exhibit awesome deportment in our walking, standing, sitting, and reclining. 1. Sit like a bell. Sit solidly. Do not be like a pendulum that swings to and fro. Sit erect and upright, with the eyes contemplating the nose, and the nose contemplating the mouth, and the mouth contemplating the heart. With the tongue touching the roof of your mouth, you swallow the saliva as it is secreted. 2. Walk like a breeze. During the short running period, run like the wind. Let that wind blow to the point that the heavens above disappear and the very earth dissolves and all people in between are gone. When one is working hard, there is no mark of others, and therefore there is no heaven above, no earth below, and no people in between. During the longer walking periods, we should walk like a breeze without causing any ripples. 3. Stand like an evergreen. When standing, keep your back straight. Stand upright, just like a lofty evergreen tree. 4. Recline like a bow. When lying down, assume the auspicious reclining position. Lie on your right side with your right hand under your right cheek and your left hand resting along your left side. Great Master Yongja said, walking is Chan, sitting is Chan, in speech or silence, in movement or stillness, my body is at ease. Even if someone held a knife at me, I would remain calm. Even if someone poisoned me, I would not get upset. Master Bodhidharma, the first patriarch in China, was poisoned on 6 occasions by externalists. Even though he knew very well that it was poison, he still consumed it. Thus we know that he was devoid of self and could look lightly on birth and death. When cultivators work hard, the heavens shake and the earth quakes and the ghosts and spirits weep. Even the demon kings are shocked. By working hard in our practice, we can keep the demon kings from being able to exert their power. That shocks them. If we could practice diligently for these 21 hours a day and work hard every second, we would surely cause the heavens to shake and the earth to quake. In practicing to reach unconditional dharmas, we begin with conditional dharmas. We should not be afraid of the toil of the running periods and the sitting periods. Running can be likened to the conditional, while sitting can be likened to the unconditional. Hence the saying, within the unconditioned are conditions. Within conditions lies the unconditioned. What is conditional is also unconditional. The conditioned is unconditioned. The unconditioned is conditioned. As skill increases, afflictions decrease. Sitting in chan is like being a horse trainer or a monkey trainer. It's not easy. Although it is not easy, we still have to sit regardless of how difficult it is. In this world, whatever you want to do is not easy and requires a lot of effort. Chan sitting is also like that. It requires a good deal of hard work and effort. If we could restrain our mad mind and calm our wild nature, and if we could confine ignorance and false thoughts to a single location, then our skill will increase day by day and our afflictions decrease correspondingly. Sitting in meditation is like unraveling a silken cocoon. When we sit in meditation, we are as if unraveling the silk from a cocoon. We are like silkworms encased in a cocoon, caught in the six desires and bound by the seven emotions, which are joy, anger, sorrow, fear, emotional love, hatred, and desire. Although these seven emotions cannot be eradicated immediately, they should be reduced bit by bit. 1. Joy. We should not be excessively happy to the point of laughing as if we had gone mad. 2. Anger. Furthermore, we should not display anger. As it is said, the fire of ignorance, blazing like the stars, will consume a forest of merit and virtue. Firewood collected over 1,000 days can be burned up by a single spark. If your mind is calm when you sit in chan, then you will feel very peaceful. However, if you indulge in anger, you will be afflicted with 100 types of illnesses. The bones and joints in your whole body will be very painful. The fire of anger will have burned down the Bodhi tree. 3. Sorrow. We should not allow ourselves to become overly sad. 4. Fear. With fear in the mind, we cannot achieve righteousness. 5. Emotional love. Suppose we see someone or something beautiful and react with craving and desire. Suppose we notice that others have nice things and we crave such things ourselves. Such craving comes from thoughts that are caught up in emotional love and greed. 6. Hatred. Hatred is the opposite of emotional love. Extreme love often turns into hatred. 7. Desire. This includes even thoughts of desire, and especially those that are unruly, not in accord with the way. These 7 emotions have to be eradicated bit by bit. Hence, in our practice, it is necessary to be continually cleansing the mind. When the 7 emotions have been reduced to the point of disappearing, then there will be nothing left. At that point, we will be constantly in samadhi. Whether we are walking, standing, sitting, or reclining, we will be investigating chan and practicing hard. It is then that we will recognize our original face and know whether our nostrils are pointing up or down. Sitting perfectly still. Sitting perfectly still for even an instant generates more merit than building pagodas of the 7 gems in number like Ganges sands. An instant includes numberless great kalpas. Numberless great kalpas are not beyond the present thought. The present thought does not go beyond numberless kalpas. If we could sit still for even a split second, then there would be no mark of people, self, others, and a life span. Not a single thought arises, and all conditions are put down. At that point in time, one compresses numberless great kalpas into a single thought, and one expands a single thought to include numberless great kalpas. But even if we can sit for a split second, or half an hour, or for 3 hours, or 5 hours, or even 7 days and nights, we still have to keep sitting. Then we come to realize that inside there is no body and mind, and outside there is no world. This kind of merit and virtue is greater than that of building 7 jeweled pagodas, numbering like Ganges sands. Why is that so? It is because the merit and virtue of building pagodas has form and will cease to exist eventually. If you could reach the state of having no mark of a body and mind and no mark of the world, then at that moment, your own prajna wisdom will emerge. This type of wisdom is such that one looks and does not see, hears and does not listen, and smells, but there is no scent. Nevertheless, one's enlightened awareness remains. If we could in an instant, or in a very short span of time, have no mark of others, no mark of self, no mark of living beings, and no mark of a lifespan, then we would be in accord with our inherent Buddha nature. The inherent Buddha nature can illumine the true nature of all dharmas. It does not come into being or cease to be. It is not defiled and not pure. It neither increases nor diminishes. The sunshine of our inherent wisdom cannot shine through right now because we are covered by ignorance. The dark clouds of ignorance plunge us into obscurity. As a result, we are unable to discern right from wrong, and vice versa. We recognize a thief or a son and are always engaged in upside-down false thinking. This is why we keep roaming about in birth and death, unable to extricate ourselves from it. B. Investigating the meditation topic. Fighting poison with poison, a false thought stops false thoughts. When investigating Chan, we use a meditation topic, an inquiry into what precedes the state of no thought. The most common meditation topic is, who is mindful of the Buddha? The inquiry into who is sustained, just as though we were using a drill to pierce a hole through the mind. When we find out who, then we will be enlightened. However, we cannot deduce this by using our imagination. We cannot investigate it with our mind consciousness. Instead, we have to explore and search for where we have never been and what we have never known. Sometimes a breakthrough in the investigation brings sudden enlightenment. Space is shattered and the 5 skandhas disintegrate. This is described in the Heart Sutra. When Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was practicing the profound prajna paramita, he illuminated the 5 skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. Shariputra, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. When our investigation leads to the disintegration of the 5 skandhas, then we will not be influenced by the 6 sense objects. That is the first step to accomplishing Buddhahood. However, we still have to work very hard. Furthermore, you should know that Chan investigation is different from vigorously chanting the Buddha's name. We do not incessantly chant, "Who is mindful of the Buddha? Who is mindful of the Buddha? Who is mindful of the Buddha?" as if we were shouting for help. Investigating the meditation topic has to be done slowly as we carefully search for our self nature. As it is said, investigating brings awakening. Awakening requires investigating. Actually, who is mindful of the Buddha is also a false thought, but it is a case of using poison to fight poison. We use one false thought to stop all false thoughts. Go with care. Avoid demonic possession. The meditation topic we investigate is one false thought. Our mind is full of many scattered thoughts, but by using the method of fighting poison with poison, we use one false thought to stop all our many false thoughts. Slowly, one by one, we eradicate false thoughts, so they no longer have influence on us. At that time, no matter what state arises, we will not be deluded by it. We will distinguish things clearly and not become possessed by demons. The ancients said, "It would be better to go without enlightenment for 1,000 lifetimes than to be possessed by a demon for even a single day." As we cultivate Chan meditation, we must be cautious and circumspect and not get carried away. We must be proper, magnanimous, and forthright so that demons have no chance to trouble us. Idle thoughts open the door to demons, but the meditation topic is the Dharma treasure that exorcises those demons. Concentrate on a single meditation topic. In Chan meditation, we can investigate a few meditation topics, such as, who is mindful of the Buddha? Or, what was my original face before my parents gave birth to me? Or, what is it that I cannot do without? If all of you can investigate single-mindedly, you will definitely obtain benefits. Let not a single thought arise. Be mindful of the present. Investigation is similar to drilling wood. In drilling wood, you don't stop until the drill bit makes a hole all the way through the wood. If you stop halfway, then all your earlier efforts will have all been in vain. The first priority in Chan meditation, then, is patience. If you can be patient to the extreme point, then you can reach a state of not even one thought arising. When not even one thought arises, you can get enlightened. As the saying goes, take one more step from the very top of a 100-foot pole. At that time, when you can take yet another step from the very top of a 100-foot pole, the worlds throughout the 10 directions manifest in their entirety. To gain success, however, you must apply yourself constantly in thought after thought without any laziness or slacking off. Be as a cat is when stalking a mouse. Be as a dragon is when guarding its pearl. Investigating Chan is just like using a drill bit to create a hole. You must keep on drilling until you have broken through. Drilling through is known as breaking the fundamental investigation. Having drilled a hole through, brightness will be revealed. In this dark house, without any windows or doors, you have to use a drill to make a hole. When a hole has been made, light will shine in. When you are still ignorant and do not understand anything, it is just like being in a dark room without windows and doors. If in using this skill to investigate Chan, you succeed in drilling through, light will shine in. This is investigating Chan. There's another analogy. Meditation is just like a cat stalking a mouse. When a cat stalks a mouse, it watches the mouse hole intently. The moment the mouse comes out, it pounces on it and grabs it with its paw. The mouse has no way of escaping. What is the mouse? It represents your ignorance. When you emit light, it is similar to a cat that has caught the mouse. There is yet another analogy. It is like a dragon nurturing its pearl. A dragon never strays from his gem. When two dragons fight over a pearl, they treat it as even more precious than their own lives. Hence, a dragon will think of ways and means to protect its pearl. In the same way, a Chan investigator is like a dragon that nurtures its pearl constantly in thought after thought. This is called contemplating at ease. If you can contemplate at ease, you are ever mindful of the present. However, if you cannot contemplate at ease, that means you're running away. What does it mean by running away? It means giving rise to false thoughts. As soon as you have false thoughts, you will not be at ease. When you don't have false thoughts, then you are at ease. Let me give you another example. What is meditation like? It's like a hen brooding over her eggs. When the hen broods over her eggs, she thinks, "I'm here sitting on the eggs. When the time comes, the chicks will hatch. Little chicks will definitely appear." When you investigate Chan, it is similar to a hen brooding over her eggs. You see, "Oh, one day I will be enlightened. When I practice for one day, my self nature will shine forth a bit of light. If I practice every day, then my wisdom light will shine forth constantly. Eventually, I will want to be the same as the Buddha, not in the least bit different." When you investigate in this way, you are just like the hen brooding over her eggs, and one day you will succeed. This is Chan investigation. Our meditation topic works like the headband tightening mantra. When we sit in meditation, we have to catch the little monkey. The human mind is like a wild horse, and our thoughts are as restless and naughty as a monkey. If we don't catch that monkey, it will just keep giving us the runaround. Our essence and spirit will be scattered, and our energy source will be depleted to exhaustion. The energy source of the self nature is very precious. If it is depleted by the monkey for no rhyme or reason, then it is really not worth it. Now, we need to train the horse to obey instructions and tame the monkey so that it will be obedient. This means you have to tame the wild horse mind and the monkey-like thoughts. Well, how do you do it? You need to tie on a golden headband and then chant the headband tightening mantra. In the novel Journey to the West, as soon as Xuanzang, the Tang monk, chanted the headband tightening mantra, the monkey god Sun Wukong became very obedient. What is our headband tightening mantra? The inquiry into who in our meditation topic. Who is mindful of the Buddha? Use it and the monkey-like thoughts will become obedient. Since the monkey in our mind does not know who that who is, it will concentrate single-mindedly to search for it. Once our monkey-like thoughts quiet down, our mind will attentively concentrate in its search, and our thoughts will no longer give us the runaround. If you can catch the monkey and tame it, then your skill is almost there. If you are apart from this, you have gone amiss. Investigating Chan goes beyond the hard work we do while sitting in meditation. We have to work hard while walking, standing, sitting, or reclining. Sitting meditation provides the opportunity to concentrate on the focal point of our meditation topic. Then, while walking, standing, sitting, or reclining, we continue to investigate who is mindful of the Buddha. The entire verse reads, "Walking, standing, sitting, and lying down, do not be apart from this. If you are apart from this, you have gone amiss." What is this? It refers to our investigation of our meditation topic. Who is mindful of the Buddha? Sweep away all dharmas. Separate from all marks. Those who do not understand the method of Chan investigation may treat it like chanting the Buddha's name, thinking that the more you chant, the better it is. That would be a mistake. The inquiry into the meditation topic is not done by chanting it. The best way is to stretch the resonance of the inquiry so that it lasts for several hours without ending. That inquiry could even continue for 80,000 great kalpas without interruption. That would truly be investigating Chan. Why do we investigate who is mindful of the Buddha? The word "who" is basically superfluous, but we are like monkeys, always looking around for something to do. With the word "who" acting as a shield, then all those idle thoughts will be deflected. This Dharma door uses poison to fight poison. Only when we are free of all random thoughts can we be said to be diligently wiping the mirror of our mind clean at all times. To investigate Chan simply means to diligently wipe the mirror of the mind clean. Why must we keep wiping it clean? It's so that it will not get dusty. This is the Dharma door of sweeping away all dharmas and separating from all marks. If you do not use Dharma selecting vision so that you recognize true Dharma, then you do not really know how to investigate. If you do not learn how to investigate, your efforts will just be wasted. That is because if you fail to recognize proper Dharma, you may well end up following deviant Dharmas. That is why Dharma selecting vision is so important. Contemplate at ease to find wisdom. Investigating Chan means learning to contemplate. What are we contemplating? Contemplate your illuminating prajna. I am teaching you to be mindful of the present and to contemplate yourself, not to contemplate others. Contemplate whether you are here or not. If you are here, then you can sit and investigate Chan, working hard at cultivation. If you are not here, then you are indulging in false thinking and are daydreaming. Even though you are physically in the Chan Hall, your mind has gone to New York sightseeing or to Italy for a holiday. Your mind goes everywhere, climbing on conditions. Hence, you are not at ease. To contemplate at ease is to be a bodhisattva. Not contemplating at ease, you are an ordinary person. To contemplate at ease is to experience the divine. If you do not contemplate at ease, you may end up enduring the hells. If you contemplate at ease and keep your mind from escaping, then you can practice profound prajna paramita. By physically investigating Chan continuously without cease, you are also practicing profound prajna and discovering your wisdom. Once you activate your inherent wisdom, then you can reach the other shore. The secret of chan investigation is to focus on it day and night. Focus on what? Who is mindful of the Buddha? Investigate this today and again tomorrow. Even though you practice profound prajna paramita in the chan hall every day, you may not taste the flavor of chan right away. It takes a long time to accomplish that. Only when you have gained sufficient skill in practicing profound prajna paramita will you be able to illuminate the five skandhas and see that they are all empty. When we gain the one, all things are done. The secret of investigating chan is to gain one-pointed focus. As the saying goes, when heaven attains the one, it becomes pure. When earth attains the one, it becomes peaceful. When a person attains the one, he becomes a sage. When all things attain the one, they all abide in their destiny. That is why the one is the beginning of all things. However, it is still not the ultimate Dharma. It is said, when you attain the one, all things are done. But if you attach to the one, then you will fall into two or three, and that is not true emptiness. What is true emptiness? It is zero. The zero is formed by making a circle. It is neither big nor small, neither inside nor outside. It has no beginning and no end and cannot be enumerated. However, all numbers are not apart from it. Cultivation starts with cultivating the one until you return to zero. From zero, uncountable functions come forth. Although it is said that when you obtain the one, all things are done, at the stage of zero, there is not a single thing. At that point, when not one Dharma is established, the myriad conditions are empty. That is ultimate liberation. The states of chan. The states of the four dhyanas. The process of investigating chan is similar to studying. You go from primary school to secondary school to college and then to a research institute. After passing these four stages, you can then obtain a doctorate qualification. The Dharmadhara of Chan investigation is also like that. It is divided into four steps, that is, the four states of Chan. These are briefly described below. 1. The first dhyana, the stage of happiness that leaves beings behind. This means that we depart from our relationship with all beings and obtain another type of happiness. This happiness is different from that of ordinary people. It emanates from within, the skill of our self-nature. When we reach the state of the first dhyana, our breathing stops. The external breathing stops, while the internal breathing comes alive. This phenomenon is like what happens during winter hibernation. It defies description. At that time, our mind is as clear as water and as bright as a mirror. It illuminates the fundamental substance of our self-nature, even as we are aware that we are sitting in meditation. The second dhyana, the stage of happiness that comes with samadhi. In samadhi, we experience happiness beyond compare. This has come to be known as the joy of chan, being as food, the bliss of dharma, filling us up. When we experience such happiness, we will not feel hungry. That is why people can go without food or drink for many days and still be all right. But we cannot be attached to this state. If we become attached, all our efforts will be wasted. It is even possible to enter a demonic state because of attachment. We must be very cautious. At the stage of the second dhyana, not only does our breathing stop, but our pulse stops as well. When we leave this state of concentration, our pulse returns to normal. 3. The third dhyana. The stage of the exquisite bliss that comes with transcending happiness. Here we leave the happiness of the second dhyana and reach a level of exquisite and subtle bliss. We will feel that everything is the Buddha Dharma and that all things are blissful. In this stage of the third dhyana, when we enter the state of concentration, not only do our breathing and pulse stop, but our thoughts stop. At that time, we have no thought of good or bad and no thought of right or wrong. In short, we have no more idle thoughts at all. However, we must not think that we are very special, for this is just a process. We are still a long way from ending birth and death. 4. The fourth dhyana. The stage of the purity of dispensing with thought entirely. At this stage, even the thought of happiness is gone, as we have already discarded it. We have reached the pure state of nothing whatsoever, in which things are neither conditioned nor unconditioned. The fourth dhyana is a stage a Chan investigator has to undergo. There is nothing special about this. We should not make the mistake of assuming that we have achieved the fruition of the way. If we think like that, then we are making the same mistake as the unlearned bhikshu and will fall into the hells. The state of the fourth dhyana is still at the stage of a common mortal. If we make vigorous progress, we will certify to states that enable us to enter the five heavens of no return. Only then will we have actually reached the level of a certified sage. However, even at that stage, we will still not have ended birth and death. We have to transcend the triple realm in order to end the cycle of birth and death. You have to be clear on this point and not be confused. An arhat of the first fruition is free of idle thoughts, not only when in samadhi, but also when walking, standing, sitting, and reclining. Those who reach the first fruition have ended attachments, but they must still pass through seven more births and deaths. Do not assume that the first fruition brings one to nirvana. Those sages have merely cut through 88 levels of delusions of views in the triple realm. The minds of arhats of the first fruition are not swayed, no matter what sight meets their eyes. They are free of all thoughts when facing situations. They have only the thought of the way as they cultivate Chan single-mindedly. Even if very attractive states appear to them, such as a lovely woman or a handsome man, their minds will not be moved. At this level, they experience no greed for wealth, sex, fame, food, or sleep. They are indifferent to all those desires. Only those who reach this level of skill can be called ones who have realized the fruition. An arhat of the first fruition makes no sound with his feet when he walks. His feet are an inch or so above the earth. Why? People who have attained the fruition are possessed of kindness and compassion. They are extremely concerned about not harming small insects as they walk. So, they prefer to travel in the air. merging with the great void, we have a sudden breakthrough. Here in the Chan Hall, we should work at our cultivation to the point that we are unaware of the heavens above, people in between, and the earth below. If heaven, earth, and people have all disappeared, and north, south, east, and west are forgotten, then right at that point, when not even a single thought comes forth, the entire substance can manifest. Then we will obtain the great functioning of the entire substance. However, if we indulge in idle thoughts all day long, there will certainly be no response to our efforts. Thus, we have to work to the point where not a single thought arises, and when we walk, we are not aware that we are walking. When we stand, we are not aware that we are standing. When we sit, we are unconscious of sitting. When we lie down, we are not conscious of lying down. We have no conscious awareness of walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. At that point, we eat, but are not aware of consuming a single grain of rice. We dress, but are not aware of putting on a single stitch. The ego merges with space itself at that point. When we can unite with space, then we can have a sudden breakthrough and instantly understand all things. That is the state of sudden enlightenment. Sudden enlightenment is the result of daily cultivation. When we get a response from our daily efforts, we can suddenly become enlightened. If we normally do not cultivate, then we will never gain sudden enlightenment. Similarly, after a child is born, he is steeped in words and sounds every day. When the time comes, he is naturally able to talk. When he utters his very first word, it is analogous to the enlightenment experience. Then, when the time comes, he will naturally be able to walk. And that first step he takes is also like the enlightened experience. How can he take his first step? It is because he has been observing how adults walk every day. Being steeped in that environment, very naturally, he'll be able to walk. Cultivation works the same way. We cultivate today, we cultivate tomorrow, we cultivate back and forth until our skill elicits a response. Then, when not a single thought is produced, and our idle thoughts are dispelled, we'll be enlightened. This form of enlightenment may be due to cultivating diligently every day and every moment in this lifetime. When your skill matures, you will be enlightened. This enlightenment is due to diligent cultivation in this life. At this point, someone may say, "Well, I've seen a person who did not cultivate hard at all, and yet not long after coming to the Chan Hall, he became enlightened. What is the reason?" This case is unique. Although this person did not cultivate hard in this lifetime, he had been cultivating hard in his previous lives. Not only did he cultivate, but also he had cultivated in each and every moment. However, he was just a little short of enlightenment. In this lifetime, when he encountered this state again, he became enlightened. Although sudden enlightenment is instantaneous, it still depends on all the good roots one has carefully and continually nurtured in past lives. It is just like a farmer planting a field. In the spring, he sows the seeds. In the summer, he weeds and hoes. Then in the autumn, there are crops to harvest. If one does not sow the seeds in the spring, how does one reap the harvests when autumn comes? As the saying goes, one share of plowing and weeding yields one share of harvest. We cultivators of the way are the same. Regardless of whether we are enlightened or not, we should still be courageous and vigorous in our cultivation. We should energetically strive forward. Then we have hope of gathering our harvest in the final moment and recognizing our original face. When sitting in meditation, do not seek for spiritual penetrations. When sitting in meditation, do not seek for spiritual penetrations or for any efficacious result. First, make your body clean without any sicknesses. In this way, no deviant energy will be able to penetrate your boundary. If you are constantly filled with great proper energy and have an indomitable spirit, you will naturally give rise to proper knowledge and proper views. Your conduct and actions will accord with principle. This is the benefit of sitting in meditation. If, in every instant, your state of mind does not give rise to ripples, such that you are without afflictions, without mark of right and wrong, and without mark of people and self, then you are applying effort, and this is the efficacious result of sitting in meditation. As for the efficacy of investigating Chan, you can experience it for yourself. You can return the light and illuminate within and ask yourself, am I still as gluttonous as I was before practicing Chan sitting? Am I still as materialistic as before? Have I corrected my improper habits and shortcomings? If I met with unreasonable circumstances or matters that go against my wishes, do thoughts of affliction still arise? If the answers are yes, then I can tell you that you have not progressed much from sitting in Chan. If you can reduce past bad habits and shortcomings, then you have some good news in your cultivation skill. You can examine yourself as follows. 1. Let me take a look at eating, for instance. If you could eat both tasty and non-tasty food with the same state of mind, then you would have chased away the greedy ghost. 2. Performing tasks. Is it the case that I will do anything that is a benefit to me, and that I will not do anything that does not benefit myself? Am I very lazy? And am I always seeking ease and comfort? If so, your skill in Chan Samadhi has not improved. If you could change and be willing to do whatever would benefit other people, and focus on being of service to the multitudes while not paying any attention to your own personal matters, then you could get rid of the lazy ghost. If you could become more energetic day by day and were not dazed, then you could chase away the sleepy ghost. If you could chase away the greedy ghost, the lazy ghost, and the sleepy ghost, this is the preliminary skill of Chan meditation. In this way, your spirit and temperament will definitely be greatly different from the past, and you will be a greatly changed person. As the saying goes, in the same temple, but a different God. It can also be said, in the same temple, but a different ghost. In the past, you were a ghost king, but now you are a bodhisattva. Perhaps you had an evil heart in the past, but now you have the heart of a bodhisattva. Realize that cultivating the spiritual path is not an easy matter. If you decide to cultivate, then demons will come around. They'll not come from only one direction. They'll come from all directions at once. There are demons of sickness, demons of vexation, demons in the heavens, human demons, and also demonic ghosts. There are demonesses as well. Demons appear from places that you do not expect to disturb you, so that your resolve will waver and your cultivation will falter. They use many tricks to seduce and tempt you. They also threaten you so that you'll retreat in fear. They hope your samadhi power will vanish and your resolve for the spiritual path will disappear. States may be false or true. Just about the time you've meditated to the point of success, the demons appear to test your resolve and to challenge your work in the spiritual path. They may appear as a very beautiful woman or a handsome man who comes to seduce you. If the sight doesn't disturb you, then you pass your test. But if you are distracted by this illusion, you will fall. Right there is the critical moment. Just that is the test. So I exhort you, at all costs, don't fail this test, because once you fall, you will regret it forever. When states arise to challenge your resolve, you should test the state to see whether or not it's true. What's your method of testing? It's very simple. Just recite the name of Amitabha Buddha. Recite with single-minded, unwavering concentration. If it is a false state, then gradually it will disappear and then vanish. If it is a true state, then the longer you recite, the clearer the state will grow. Chan meditators who do not understand this method will fall into the demons' traps. They'll fall among the demons, and their work in the spiritual path will be scattered and lost. Some cultivators will lose their opportunity for enlightenment after they join the demons. As soon as you cultivate the spiritual path, demons will appear. When I was young, I heard someone say, "As soon as you cultivate the spiritual path, demons will appear." I didn't believe it and arrogantly said, "I'm not afraid of demons at all. Witches, ghosts, and goblins don't frighten me in the least." I thought it didn't matter what I said. Who could have guessed that soon after my boast, a demon would show up? What kind of demon was it? It was a demon of sickness, which made me so ill that I lost consciousness for 7 or 8 days. I lapsed into a total coma. Only then did I realize that my skill was far from the mark and that I had failed my test. Maybe I wasn't afraid of witches, ghosts, or goblins, or even celestial demons and heretics. But I was afraid, as it turns out, of sickness demons. I couldn't subdue them. I couldn't handle them. I couldn't endure their attack. So we cultivators of the spiritual path cannot claim proudly that we fear nothing. As soon as we become self-satisfied and arrogant, troubles come seeking for us. Well, how should cultivators of the spiritual path be, then? We should maintain a humble and circumspect attitude and be as cautious as if we were treading on the brink of a deep abyss or as if we were standing on thin ice. At all times, we should be prudent and careful. We should pay attention and stay alert. Only then can we really cultivate the spiritual path. To sum it up, talk less and meditate more. This is the fundamental requisite of cultivation. If we awaken to what we see, we can transcend the mundane world. When cultivators of the spiritual path actually gain some attainment, they get it with someone's help. Who helps them? Demons bring cultivators to accomplishment. This is just like a knife being honed on a whetstone so that it becomes very sharp. When a cultivator realizes the light of wisdom, it is with the help of the demons. Thus, we can look upon demons as dharma protectors who help us in reverse. There is a saying, if we awaken to what we see, we transcend the mundane world. If we are confused by what we see, then we will fall back into the cycle of transmigration. With samadhi power, we need not fear demons. If we can awaken to and understand states as they appear, then we can transcend this mundane world. If we do not awaken and are instead confused by states as they occur, then we may fall so far that we end up in the hells. Cultivators of the spiritual path should not fear the presence of demons. We need only fear that our own concentration power will be insufficient to withstand them. We should realize that demons can help us along. They test us to see whether or not our spiritual skill is genuine, to see whether or not our samadhi power can endure them. If we have skill and samadhi, then no matter what demon comes, he won't be able to shake us. By neither hurrying nor slacking off, we will succeed. When practicing Chan meditation, we must not be too hurried, but we must also not slack off. If we're too hurried, we run the risk of overdoing it. If we slack off, we will fail to apply enough effort. Cultivating the spiritual path requires holding to the middle way. There is a saying, hurrying makes things too tight. Slacking off lets things get too loose. By not hurrying and not slacking off, we can succeed at what we do. If we apply effort in this way every day and in every moment without hurrying or slacking off, eventually our skill will generate a response. When this happens, we will achieve an inconceivable state. Those of you who have attained this state should not be overly happy, and those of you who have not should not be unduly sad. If a practitioner becomes overly happy, a demon of happiness can come and disrupt his samadhi power, causing that person to laugh and smile unnaturally all day long. If someone asks him what he's laughing about, he will not know. If he does not even know why he's laughing, then basically he's lost his senses. He's gone mad. A demon of madness has already possessed him. Conversely, if a cultivator becomes excessively sad and worried and depressed, a demon of sadness can come and disrupt her samadhi power, causing her to sob and cry unnaturally all day long. If someone asks her why she's crying, she may reply, "Beings are suffering so much. They're so pitiful. I wish to cross over all beings." However, if she cannot even cross over herself, how can she possibly save others? Excessive displays of sorrow are an indication that a person has been possessed by a demon of sadness. Do not be moved by sounds. When we sit in meditation, we should not be moved by sounds or be turned by forms. Some people may have cultivated for a long time, but when states arise, they attach to them. We should not do that. We should hear without listening. We should see without perceiving. Not listening and not perceiving, we will not be moved by states. Do not harbor thoughts of hatred and love. As all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, how could there be some dharmas that we like and some that we dislike? In investigating Chan, we should work on this very thing. We should not harbor thoughts of hatred and love. but should instead bring our minds to a state of equilibrium. In a still spring pond, undisturbed even by ripples, silt will naturally settle to the bottom, and the water will become clear. Investigating Chan is also like that. If not even ripples of false thoughts stir in our minds, then the Dharma body will manifest. The Dharma I have just spoken is very important. I hope that all of you will cultivate according to this principle. For if you do, you will very quickly open your wisdom. What is spoken is the Dharma. Practice of it is the way. If we understand the Dharma and yet do not cultivate the way, we will not make any progress. No matter what happens, remain in unmoving suchness. When we sit in meditation, all kinds of different states may arise. Regardless of whether a state is wholesome or unwholesome, we should not pay too much attention to it. If we pay attention to it, we will be turned by the state. But if we deliberately ignore it, then we are not being turned by it. Sometimes Chan cultivators may feel as if they are as large as empty space. At other times, they may feel that they are even smaller than a speck of dust. There are occasions when they feel as though their bodies no longer exist and they do not know where they have gone. Sometimes they may feel unbearably cold. At other times, they may feel unbearably hot. Sometimes they feel that their bodies are harder and stronger than Vajra. At other times, their bodies may feel as soft and light as cotton. Sometimes they may feel their bodies charged with energy akin to electricity. At other times, they may feel that they are emitting bright light. In a nutshell, such states are boundless and endless, but we should not become attached to any of them. If we become attached to them, then we may enter a demonic state. As long as we remain unattached, we will not have any problem. The Sharangama Sutra says that whatever states arise, if we do not discriminate and instead act as if nothing is happening, then we will be fine. However, if we decide that we must be special to be able to experience such a terrific state, we will fall and become possessed by a demon. Whatever states we encounter, we must remain unmoved. Eventually, we will enter unmoving suchness and gain samadhi power that is perfectly clear and constantly bright. Then, no matter what happens, we will be able to turn the state around instead of being turned by it.